Hi, Gudvach. This is Yisachar Wartel. I apologize for not being around last week. I hope you were able to get some insights into the Parsha. Enjoyed going through Parsha Behalotcha, which had quite a lot in it. And Parsha Tzlach, although it's a little less diverse, still has quite a lot in it. I also wanted to mention that this week's Dvar is sponsored and for the Refuah Shleima of Zev and Leah, Dr. Zelenko, as it also was the last time. So again, please have in mind Zev and Leah for a complete and speedy Refuah Shleima. All right. So in this week's Parsha, the spies, the Meraglim, are sent out to survey Eretz Yisrael, and 10 of them come back with what's called Dibat Haaretz, slander of the land. So this interesting expression is numerically equal to that of Shabbat, meaning the gematria of the words Dibat Haaretz is 702, which is the same as the word Shabbat. At first, there seems to be no connection, but upon closer inspection, it is shown to be inherently related. Shabbat is a time to reflect upon one's relationship with Hashem and his relationship with the world. It's a time for families to come together. In short, it's a time for oneness. And that's true not only for the Shabbos day, but the Shabbos year, which is Shemitah, the Shemitah year. Now, the Shemitah, or the, also known as the sabbatical year, Sabbath year, is a time to let the land rest, giving it somewhat of a personification, which we can also see in the terms about Dibat Haaretz. Now, the land doesn't have feelings, so what does it mean to speak badly or slander the land? So we also see some kind of personification here, right? Now, although it's beneficial from the with respect to Shemitah to have, an agriculturally, to have it, you know, regain its nutrients, etc., Hashem didn't explicitly have to create nature that way. Rather, the Shabbos year, which is the Shemitah year, was given to us to refrain from doing work. Without having to expend the effort each day during this year to toil and make a living, the Jewish people, and this is certainly true for, you know, one day a week, the Jewish people are now free to spend more time with their families, more time Torah learning, and have more time for personal growth. So we get 1 year out of seven and 1 day out of seven per the week. This requires great faith and trust in the Kodesh Baruch Hu, especially for the Shemitah year. But even just, you know, it wasn't always so simple to take off for Shabbos. You had that faith that you'd be able to, you know, find another job or make parnasa. So this, therefore, having this emunah and bitachon and Hashem will strengthen the bond and sense of awareness between a person and Hashem. Now, the Meraglim had become comfortable with their lives in the Midbar, that Hashem would provide them with food, shelter, and clothing. They were once hard laborers in Mitzrayim and didn't really ever want to work again. They looked at the 6 years of labor, or 6 weekdays accordingly, and did not comprehend the beauty of Shabbos or the sabbatical year. Now, this is also simple, which, of course, wouldn't take into effect until they went into the land. They didn't have to observe that in the Midbar. Now, this concept is also symbolized by the Eshkol, the cluster of grapes that they brought back from the land. As Perek Yigimel Pasuk Chaf Gimel states, Vayavo'u ad Nachal Eshkol, and they came into the valley of Eshkol. Now, it was so called for the gigantic clusters of grapes that grew there. And the pasuk continues, Vayichretu misham zemora ve'eshkol anavim echad. And they cut from there a branch and one cluster of grapes. Now, here the word eshkol is actually spelled with a vav, whereas before it was not. Eshkol without a vav is numerically equal to artzachem, your land. This enormous cluster could have been seen as an amazing blessing, that the abundance of fruit was seemingly endless. This is your land. This is the blessing that Hashem gave to you. Isn't it amazing? It's so great. They had to look at it with an eye and toe, with a good eye, and see how amazing this was. If the produce of the land was as bountiful, then surely there wouldn't be need to worry about the Shemitah year. But alas, it was not the Shemitah year that the Meraglim were concerned with. They were rather concerned with the other 6 years, right? They didn't want to have to work, and they don't have to toil for one's needs. You know, additionally, living in the land would also require more of commandments to take effect, which they didn't want to have to take upon themselves, including many revolving around crops, such as, you know, truma and maser. Now, maybe enough to work for the crops, but then to have to tie them, leave some for them before, worry about kalayim, forbidden mixtures, and then shemitah restrictions. The spies didn't want to be forced into this. They had a comfortable life, Baruch Hashem, in the Midbar. You know, okay, they it wasn't everything, but they really had a pretty much a perfect life. And, they didn't want to have to get involved with so many of these agricultural laws and all these complexities, and they assumed the rest of the Jewish nation didn't want it either. Therefore, they saw this eshkol as an opportunity to wiggle free from their circumstances. They saw the vav, which represents a connection, a way to connect with what they were instructed to do, which is bring back produce, to what they wished to do, which was to not enter the land of Eretz Yisrael. However, when cutting down the cluster, there was still a chance to be awe-inspired. They took the cluster as one, but the pasuk then states, "Vayasahu b'mot b'shnayim," and they carry it with poles as two. This is often translated as on a double pole or two sets of poles, but the pasuk does not say b'mot shnayim, right? It says b'mot b'shnayim, with poles with two. The Meraglim have made up their mind to have the cluster serve as two specific functions and be a source of division, in a sense, to be which is symbolized by the number two, between Moshe and the Jewish people. Rashi points out that Kalev and Yeshua were aware of the other's agenda and therefore specifically refrained from carrying this fruit, these clusters. Now the next pasuk states, "L'makom ahu kara nachal eshkol al edot odot ha'eshkol asher kartu misha b'nei Yisrael." And this place was called the Valley of Eshkol on account of the occurrence of Eshkol that B'nai Israel cut from there. Once again, here, the word Eshkol is written with a vav, both times that it's mentioned, and it's shown to have a crucial importance. Furthermore, the pasuk states that B'nai Israel cut from there. At this point, it was only the 10 spies that have cut the fruit. What does it mean that B'nai Israel cut them? Right? B'nai Israel didn't cut them. The 10 Meraglim cut them. Rather, the pasuk can be reinterpreted as follows. Asher kartu misham B'nai Israel, that which they cut from there, B'nai Israel. The root cut rate in a simple meaning is defined as cut, but can also refer to spiritual excursion, which we also learn as kares, which I'm not going to get into exactly how that punishment works right now. But by these 10 acts that the 10 spies, by these acts that these 10 spies did, they thereby cut off B'nai Israel from ever reaching the land and a certain chelek, which they would have had, since they just spoken so badly about it and caused B'nai Israel to thereby complain and basically spurn this amazing gift that Hashem had given to them. Only the next generation would be allowed to enter Eretz Yisrael. Now, the Torah explains that this avera was symbolized by ha-eshkol, which is, this word is numerically equivalent to the word snuah, hated. The Meraglim acted as though they hated the land. It wasn't that they really hated the land, but they just didn't want all that was tied to it. They didn't treat it like the land of blessing that it surely is, and the entire generation was forced to pay the price. And this, of course, is with the exception of Kaleb and Yehoshua. Yeshua was expected to side with Moshe, but Kaleb was in fact the big surprise opponent to the spies' agenda. So what is the significance of 10 being apart from 12? This is also seen hundreds of years later when the 10 tribes were exiled from the land and only two remained. And there's a ton of symbolism and it goes very, very deep, which I'm not really going to get into so much right now, but 12 is written via the letters Bet Yud, which can either be defined as B, within me, or Bay, the house of, both connoting a sense of inclusion and togetherness. These 10, which symbolized by the Yod, did not connect with the spiritual selves, as Yod connotes spirituality, as well, and then also the number 10, but rather they left the collective. And when 10 separates from the 12, one is left with only two, which is often symbolic of division and disunity. Now, in both cases, these remaining two demonstrated strength and a bond to Hashem that, in a sense, patched the division. In this case, it was Kalev and Yehoshua. In the later case, it was the tribes of Yehuda and Binyamin. Now, this allowed the division to be at least somewhat patched so that although the 10 was exposed and broken without a source to hold them together, there still was some element connected to Hashem. So, here we had Kalev and Yeshua carrying, holding some chelek so that at least, the next generation could enter Eretz Yisrael and Kalev and Yeshua themselves could enter Eretz Yisrael. And, the females were able to enter Eretz Yisrael since they didn't complain, as the Midrash teaches. Now, it's interesting that by the Assyrian exile, when the 10 tribes were exiled, the Gemara in Sanhedrin explains that Chizkiah, king of Yehuda and Benjamin, was devoutly righteous and influenced the members of these two tribes to devote themselves to Torah and moral purity. And they were therefore spared from destruction and exile, unlike the other 10 tribes who were lost. And they're pretty much lost until today. Now, there are countless lessons that can be learned from this story, but perhaps the most intriguing is, in fact, the power of Shabbos. The report that the spies brought back contained numerous parts. The fact that there were giants and cities, it's fortified, but was technically truthful, and although indicative of lacking faith, was understandable. Making the fruit of the land part of the reason not to enter it, though, that was absurd. That was not necessary. The fruit was by no means an obstacle and was most certainly a blessing. The fact that the Meraglim manipulated it and used it as a tool for their evil plan, which is why it was considered a focal point of our story. And much of this revolves around the fact that they focused on what was wrong rather than what was right. They focused on the 6 days or 6 years rather than the Shabbos. Shabbos is what enables us to endure the rest of the week, and all 7 days are integral towards a meaningful and productive life. And Baruch Hashem that we once again have the land of Israel, whereby many are once again dependent upon the Shem for rain and are able to double the Shabbos blessing by able to observe the Shemitah. Right? It's an amazing thing, which it's coming up this year. It's coming up this Rosh Hashanah will be Shemitah year. May it be Hashem's will and our effort towards unity and devotion that we merit a time where we shall all be together in the promised land, the land of Eretz Yisrael, and to be able to observe all of the 613 mitzvot. Shabbat Shalom.